No one wants to get divorced, but that doesn't stop a whole lot of people from doing it these days. Today we'll run down, David Letterman style, a top 10 list of don'ts for divorcing parents. And we're hoping that folks with experience in this area will call us with the lessons they've learned over the years. With us today, Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a Lawrence psychologist and author. He's a board certified in couples and family psychology. Wes, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
Nice to be here.
Ron Nelson is a Johnson County family law attorney who has given frequent input into legislation governing family law, custody, and divorce in Kansas. Ron, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Well, there's all this disagreement over what percentage of couples get divorced these days, Wes. I mean, for some demographics, it's as high as 50%. For other couples, it's as low as 35%. Can you guys shed any light on what we got on our hands here?
Yeah, if you just Google divorce rates, what you really will find is an extensive debate about how to calculate divorce rates. And it runs around 41% for first marriages, depending on how you calculate it, in divorces per thousand marriage. And then it clearly, one thing that we all do agree on is that second marriages, it goes way up, some estimates as high as into the 60s and 70s. And then third marriages tend to end at a lower rate.
Because you're worn out by that.
Well, you spent all your money on people like Ron to fix this. No, it may be that, or it may be people finally, and this has been the psychological theory for quite a while, is that people finally catch on by the third marriage that they've got to deal with their own problems and not just blame the other person. And by then, they've mellowed out a little bit about that.
But Ron, is the law when it comes to divorce and you know, families, is that continuing to evolve? I suspect it is.
It's continuing to evolve, but the what has been happening is fewer and fewer people are marrying in the first place.
Ah.
And so what we're dealing with now is fewer people being married, so fewer divorces, but there are more parentage cases, actions between former partners who were living together about what happens after they separate, and those aren't classified as divorce, obviously, since they were never married.
You were saying that the bulk of your casework involves couples post-divorce. They've gone through the divorce proceedings, and then they're coming back to adjust things and deal with issues at that point.
Right, and that is primarily because my practice has evolved into handling child custody cases, which primarily tend to be disagreements after the divorce itself or after the parentage decree was entered, and in the ensuing years when all sorts of things can come up, when new relationships come in, when new partners, new marriages, and when the children grow older.
Yeah, that sounds like emotionally difficult work, and I'm wondering, where's the reward in what you do?
It's extremely difficult work, as Wes knows from his clients and the people that he deals with. The pleasure for me is helping people to resolve those issues in an agreeable way, or if not, trying to get the parties refocused in their lives on their children's best interests rather than, at least for my clients, focusing on their own anger, upset, their own agenda against their former partner.
I bet blowing off steam for you is something that has to happen with some regularity.
I should do it more.
We all should. I can relate to that.
Really, the secret for that is so much easier to say than it is to do, and that is you just cannot become part of the divorce. Too often, psychologists or attorneys who deal with these cases, you just get sucked right into the same system. And so it's fun to say just stay above all that, and a lot harder to actually get that done. They're very emotionally reactive experiences.
And Wes, these are incredibly difficult situations at times. Spreadsheets are involved, the finances of who's paying for what. Everything, in some cases, I imagine, has to be nailed down. Every T has to be crossed. Every I has to be dotted. That strikes me just as enormously fraught with peril, I guess.
Yeah, I'd like to say if people will follow our 10 don'ts today, all the world will be perfect and they will march happily through their divorce. That's probably a little too much, but the things that people don't get right are the things that set up the scenario you're talking about. I had a custody evaluation once where it was so problematic that in the parenting plan, I literally calculated and accounted for every minute of the children's parenting time for the year. There was to be no flexibility whatsoever, and it would come down to, 3:59 on a Thursday, and no one could change it. I don't know who wants to live in that kind of a world.
Did that couple wind up living by that? I mean, do you have any sense?
By the time that I had done that evaluation, they had had enough courtroom time that the judge stamped that and said, you'd better live by it, because it was so acrimonious. And people shouldn't need that level of structure, but some people do, because they will look for any angle, usually to undermine the other parent or to show their greatness or whatever it will be. And so you end up sketching this whole ridiculously detailed footnoted schedule out because they can't self-heal. Now, are those the majority cases? Absolutely not. Those are the small minority of super high conflict divorces, but they keep the courts busy.
I was going to say, what percentage of cases falls into the super high conflict arena as far as you're concerned?
It's always under 10%. Do you have a better number, Ron?
I don't necessarily have a better number. But
in your own practice?
Ours
are huge percentage.
Yes.
Because we get the rough ones. But in the larger scope, the vast majority of marriages or divorces are not high conflict.
Ron, most of yours are high conflict?
All of mine are high conflict. That's what I focus on. Mm-hmm. And generally, most attorneys talk about 90% of cases are either agreed before the case is filed or shortly after that, or at least before the court ends up having to hear the trial.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10% that have to go to trial, have to have a judge decide the case, and it's significantly smaller than that 10% who are frequent flyers, who are constantly back in court about one dispute or another with the former partner. And I have cases that have been going on for 10 years, some for 15 years.
Wow.
Some end up going for 20 or 21 years.
Hey, how do you deal in your office, in your conference room, I'm imagining, with a couple who's highly emotional, the conflict is all over the situation? How do you deal with those two people and help them progress down the track of life to deal with this thing?
Well, I typically don't deal with both people. I deal with my client.
Oh, I see.
And,
okay, of course. Sure.
And one of the things that I have found that reduces my stress a lot, that reduces the stress of my staff, and frankly helps the court ultimately, is that not only am I fairly selective about the clients that I will take, but the clients that I take need to follow along with my general philosophy, is that you're going to be living with this other parent in some way for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of creating problems, you need to figure out a way to resolve them or solve them. My staff frequently work with our clients on communication skills, on how to communicate, on how not to react or overreact. I've got a cartoon in my office, and I guess it's Nick Galifianakis, and it is him talking with some, or the cartoon character talking with someone else and saying, it's family law. And it's about overreaction. It's family law.
Well, and people, family, it is always the thing that's going to get you. I know people who practice criminal law now having started in family law, and they find it much easier. Mm. Much easier to defend people for murder than to work in the family court. I've heard this many times. Psychologists say the same thing. Much easier to do evaluations for people who are involved in criminal cases or forensic accounting cases or anything else than it is family law because of family. It is very emotional. We see family as a different experience than anything else in our lives. It's more emotionally evocative.
Wow. Well, and yeah. along with that, the criminal defendants tend to be on their best behavior,
right.
and clients in family law cases are on absolutely their worst behavior. Yeah,
there's no such requirement in family court.
Man, well, I bet you guys have some stories. So, Wes Crenshaw, what are we going to do here today? Because we have this top 10 style list to run through today. We're going to discuss each of them. What are we doing?
We're going to count them down from 10 to 1 of things you shouldn't do in a divorce and then give you the better alternative for that. And the number one, interestingly enough, is, and this is, I don't think this is proven in the literature, but I've found it again and again, is people who put off their divorce so long that the acrimony in the marriage is just like a coiled spring ready to explode. And people have good reasons for this. I mean, they think they have good
reasons. They're trying to protect the kids in many cases.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
That's a big one. Or there's also financial reasons. When we went through the recession, people couldn't sell their houses. I had people living together who just hated each other. And they could not get away like two cats in a bag, and they couldn't get rid of the house. Now, that's gotten a lot better nowadays, but there are a number of financial reasons that can slow that down. And the thing people really don't realize till you've done this for a few years and seen kids grow up is that it's really – kids are more malleable when they're under middle school age, when they're in elementary school. And so if people really see the marriage starting to go south – it's better to act on that. Try to get it fixed. If you fail to get it fixed, go ahead and do the divorce before kids hit middle school. Instead, people, I know you think I'm kidding, but people will decide, well, let's just have more kids. And this happens so frequently, in part because people want to have the same paternity for the kids, but they see the marriage failing. And it does. And then you have even more children who are being caught up.
Well, I imagine a lot of parents, Wes, think that their kids are too young to go through a divorce. And you're suggesting just the opposite with your number 10 idea here, that it's a better time when they're younger than not.
It's never worse than when you're 13 or 14. This is when kids are experiencing what it means to be a sexual person, a romantic person, and to think about relationships. And right then they get hit with this experience of having their parents separate. So, and it's also, by the way, kind of rough after they go to college. People will be sitting there tapping their watch. Oh, my gosh, let's just wait till Johnny goes to KU and then we can get a divorce. And that's actually really hard. Johnny goes off. He's in the dorms. He's having a hard time this first semester. And the folks call up and say, listen, we're going to court. Yeah. We're getting a divorce.
Yeah.
So really, any time in adolescence, which extends into the 20s, as we've talked about, is harder than it is when kids are younger and they're adaptable. Now, of course, how you conduct the divorce makes more difference than anything. But waiting so long that it's just hateful is not a good decision.
So you're saying just adolescence will end at some point? As the father of two boys, you can promise me that this is going to
come to an end. I promise. And you have nice young men. I know them. And I think that they will do fine. But yes, it will end about age 25.
25. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to hold you to that, just for the record. Ron, can there be practical reasons for delaying a divorce, such as not being financially feasible for one or both of the parties to go ahead and proceed?
Well, like Wes mentioned, all reasons that people have are good reasons, and they're practical reasons. They're simply not realistic reasons. It's frequent that I see people who have been together and hated being together for 10 years or longer.
Wow. Wow.
Absolutely true.
They talk about wanting to divorce years and years ago, but they couldn't bring themselves to do it because of the children. And this goes to divorce lawyers and lawyers who handle family law that I know across the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's, for some reason, a standard.
Yeah.
Well, and that really brings us to number nine pretty nicely, and that's catastrophizing, is the fear of divorce or the idea that the kids will be so terribly damaged by this tends to push people away from divorce, forgetting that kids are actually pretty resilient, and how things go down will depend on you as the parent, so don't always expect it to be a catastrophe. And the other thing I see is that parents will blame problems kids have on divorce. And I've seen enough kids in 25 years of practice that I can tell you a lot of them would have had the same problems if there weren't a divorce, and a lot of the kids in intact families, undivorced families, have many problems.
And when you talk about how things go down, so you're suggesting what when it comes to how mom and dad should begin to handle this?
Well, that, you know, again, follow our list and don't do any of these things, but to try to realize more than anything else, you're still co-parents. And it is so easy to say that. And then when people get into their sense of who they think they are in the parent, in the parent-child relationship and in the co-parenting relationship, they tend to overvalue their greatness and undervalue the other person. I love my wife. She's great. Thankfully, she's not listening today. But we differ, and I'm just positive that I am the better parent. I know that I am, and if she would just listen to me, things would go better, and I'm sure she would say the same thing about me. Well, that becomes pathologized in the divorce, and you begin to not like that person, and it's not good-humored anymore, where you think, well, I'm better at this than you are. That's got to all go away, and if kids see the parents pulling together as parents, even as they're pulling apart in the marriage, that alone will boost the divorce to a better level.
And the trick of pulling together at such a contentious time, that's easier said than done.
And that is why we have our list, because so many times the pulling apart is a lot of these mistakes people make. And I do work. I try to get in as early in a divorce as I can and help people think through how they want to do this. I'd like to tell you every one of those planes lands safely at the airport, but I have seen a few crash. But if you can try and bring them in safely, it is a lot better for kids.
Okay. This hour, we're talking about the don'ts of divorce, things to avoid if you're about to go through a divorce or maybe you're halfway through. Again, our guest, Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence. He's a psychologist. Ron Nelson, a Johnson County family law attorney. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Okay, Wes, we've gone through number 10. We've gone through number 9. We're staring right in the face of number 8 here, which is do not. The advice is to do not rely on a broad, nonspecific schedule. And you mean what by that?
People will come out of these divorces and they will want to just wing it. And we usually, you know, I gave the example of the ultra super structured one. The opposite of that is that people are just going to kind of find their way. And that leaves them, and have I seen this work? Sure. You've got people who just were the friendliest divorced people ever, even to the point where their kids have this fantasy they're going to get back together. But barring that, normally what happens is then people start fighting for any inch of things. And it's just like a business partnership. Anyone who's been in a business partnership knows that people very quickly begin to feel like the other person doesn't work hard enough or doesn't contribute enough money or doesn't contribute enough energy to the business. The same way it is true in a marriage, you'll get this sense, and in a divorce, that the other person isn't pulling their load or that they're trying to do too much or cutting you out. And without having a specific plan in place, there's nothing to regulate that.
A plan in place that will do what, Wes?
Well, Ron, you might want to speak
to
that.
What plans these are?
Well, we were talking earlier about all of the detailed financial provisions that parents may have in their separation property settlement agreement. Oftentimes, there are 20, 30-page agreements between them where 90% of that agreement deals with the financial arrangements between them or property division. Unfortunately, in far too many divorces, parentage cases, a very small portion is dedicated to working out who has the child when and what the arrangements are between the two parents. It used to be that a lot of parenting, what were not then parenting plans, said that one parent had physical custody of the child and the other parent had reasonable visitation. Well, the problem with that is nobody knows what reasonable visitation means.
Yeah.
And so there would be constant disagreements with one parent asserting, well, you can't see the children now, or the other parent saying, well, it says reasonable visitation, and what I'm saying is reasonable. And so usually what we try to do is detail out what the schedule that each parent will have the children, when that's going to be.
How specific do you get?
We get down to the hour and minute.
Minute,
how the exchange is to take place, where the exchange is to take place.
Oh, is that right?
Often, what the
yes. Mm-hmm.
What the holidays are, what the time of beginning and ending of the holidays are to be, hoping that we never have to use that level of detail.
Boy, that's breathtaking.
I've had to lay them out sometimes where they have to sit on the north side of the stadium, one does, and the other one has to sit on the south side of the stadium so they won't encounter each other. I know that sounds ridiculous, and you can trust me when I say there's been good reasons for that.
Wow. 816-235-2888 is the number. Patty from Prairie Village, good morning.
Yes, when I was getting my divorce, a very good friend came to me and said, Patty, you're really saying some, you know, bad things about your ex. And she said, I think you're saying them in front of your children. I would advise you not to do anything like that at all in front of your children. And don't badmouth them. It will come back, you'll come back to haunt you later. And so I followed her advice, and she was right. I didn't need to say all those mean things, and the children didn't need to hear them. And as the children grew up and, you know, became adults, they all were very grateful for the way I handled the divorce. And so that really helped me. Don't badmouth them.
I think you had a really good friend, and what I would take from you is not only the good advice you're giving us, but the fact that social influence is important. And instead, what we too often see is divorced people get together and have a badmouthers club. So they all get together and talk about their exes. And I wish more friends did what your friend did and really kind of support you by monitoring what you're saying and giving you good advice on how to limit some of the damage. It's really a good example.
Patty, thank you for the good call. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. We're listening. Bye-bye.
Okay, we're moving down the list here. We're at number 7 now, things not to do. Do not pay more attention to your wants and needs at the expense of the children's best interests. Ron, that strikes me as pretty self-explanatory.
Well, really what it is parents tend to focus on what they want after the separation and during the divorce. Oftentimes, I hear people talking about, well, it's just not fair that I not have more time with my child, or it's not fair that the other parent isn't taking the children during the time the times that are set aside. And everybody seems to focus so much on fairness of the situation instead of what's a good and appropriate schedule of time that is the most cooperative and that is the best for the children.
Mm-hmm. Wes?
And that's the concept that Ron and I know so well that it has its own acronym that stands for the best interest of the child. And while that is a somewhat abstract concept,
That's the paramount concept.
It's a somewhat abstract idea, but we have plenty of material in the literature, legal and psychological, to inform our decision about that. And what it really means is the first thing we think about is what is going to work best for the kids. And that may be disappointing, maybe often disappointing for parents. As you and I, parents of teenagers, know, and Ron has had teenagers in the past, teenagers are often quite joyful and quite disappointing. Mm-hmm. And when you're in a divorce, you tend to personalize some of that stuff as a matter of the divorce. Most of the time, kids just aren't that interested in hanging out with a parent when they're a teenager. They want to go be with their friends. And when you hit the divorce period, that starts feeling like you're, you know, alienated from your child or something. So you've got to pay a lot of attention to the kids and their best interests.
And there are a lot of parents who, going into a divorce, realize that they didn't spend nearly enough time with their children, and so they try to make up for that by all of a sudden heaping attention and care and oftentimes money on their children, taking them out, the Disneyland effect.
Well, our next caller wants to talk just about the Disneyland effect you're talking about, Ron. Terry from Lawrence. Terry, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yeah, I feel like the best thing a father can do, from my experience, is take every minute. If you've got something scheduled when your children are supposed to be with you, reschedule it, take the weekend with your kids, spend as much time with them as you can. Look for things that they're interested in, and if they're getting older and they have buddies or girlfriends, find stuff that they would be interested in and do it with them. That way you can stay in touch with them, and if their friends see that you're the kind of person that's fun to be around, they're going to want to be around you more. I've lived through this situation for 15 years, and to me the most important thing is to always try and make it entertaining when your children are with you.
All right. Does that make sense, Ron?
It does, yeah. And a big part of what parents don't realize when going into a divorce is that the time that they miss and want to make up is hallway time, not actually doing anything with their kids when the parents were living together, but passing in the hall saying, hey, bud, how you doing today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will say this. One of the things, and this really goes into number six, which is what really Ron was raising, this idea of trying to make up for past failures by suddenly becoming the super parent in the divorce. The flip side of that is, I actually learned how to parent from working with divorced dads. And I decided that many divorced dads, and I have seen it opposite gender, but it tends to be this way, will sort of decide, okay, now I got to get up and do what needs to be done because I don't have my wife covering everything if I'm going to do shared parenting. And some of them jump up and do an amazingly good job. And I decided I wanted to be like that minus the divorce. So I really do, and have, since my kids were very little, taken them and just gone and did stuff. Go to New York, go to Washington, go to Worlds of Fun, whatever it may be, minus my wife. And so we have a whole culture, my kids and I, together, of doing a lot of interesting things. We were at the 9/11 memorial last year, which yesterday we thought a lot about. So I think if the less involved parent in a marriage does want to stand up and really get involved, that happens, and that's an okay thing. But to go in and try to do this sort of grand gesture where you reorganize your entire life, sometimes that's more of a promise than a check that can be cashed.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Michael from Mission Hills. Michael, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, I love that part he just said about fathers stepping up when you don't have that helper there. I learned that, and I became a better person, a better dad, and it really worked out well from that aspect. So kudos for him for bringing that up.
Okay.
My big point though was, one of the solutions is, when you do have one of these high conflict divorces, and you have a parenting plan that's laid out minute by minute, please, both parents follow that, because when one parent doesn't, then the other one's gonna feel robbed and defensive. And they're going to want that time back, and they start protecting that time and fighting for that time. And half of my holidays were messed up that way, and I'm constantly complaining to the case manager. And for whatever reason, and I see this a lot, where the guys we're not valued as much in this scenario, because the mothers are normally the maternalistic ones, and they're just valued more. And so this is the first time I'd ever felt discrimination in my life. And I gave up a fantastic career as an airline captain, and did a great job with my preemie twins. And so my twins really missed out over the course of 7 years of this fighting, and then half the holidays, they've missed out with me. And now this case manager doesn't defend my time, and so the kids are really hurting from this. And now,
Wes, why don't you weigh in here? I need to move on here a little bit, but
we cannot litigate his case.
Yeah,
here.
Right here.
But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you, what I agree with much of what he was saying there in the beginning is that you have to be an active part of your kids' lives if you want to be an active part in the divorce, or you need to really start mm-hmm. that culture, or else kids, this idea of the grand gesture after it's over, it kind of blows the kids' minds. The kids don't say, oh, finally, Dad. Let's say Dad has come home and he's going to pay attention to us. They say, like, what is going on here?
Right.
We don't know this person. So the best thing you can do in a marriage in the event a divorce should occur is to have built that culture from day one.
Okay, we're halfway through our list of top 10 things not to do if you're going through a divorce. Wes Crenshaw, let's move on to the fifth one here. Do not, you say, move on too quickly, meaning what?
Well, the biggest, there are 100 of them, but the biggest one is either the divorce finalizes or quite frequently well before it does. Off go one or both of the parents to find new partners. And I understand loneliness, and I very much work with people to quickly heal their divorce by finding new partners. That's not even the biggest problem. The biggest problem is then they move the partner in, you know, 3 weeks
wow.
later, or
wow.
they want the kids to accept the partner or call him Daddy Bill. I almost can't believe some of the ways
wow.
this plays out. And so
wow.
kids are not as ready for parents to move on. And if parents want to begin to do some dating, some what I would refer to as light dating, then that's fine. But they should let that be a separate part of their life. Also, just being so super happy that you're rid of that person you can't
mm-hmm.
stand. You know, go share that with your therapist.
Yeah.
The kids see that and they feel that the other parent's being degraded and they react negatively to that. People don't like it when you put down their other
parent. Do you know if you're moving on too quickly? If it's 3 weeks later, you're bringing home somebody
Definitely.
Living out,
so,
that would be a sign. Yeah.
I would get the lady that called earlier, I would go get her friend
mm-hmm.
and really have a objective social network that can speak to that a little bit. And not just your in-divorce crew that always is encouraging you to get divorced. Look for some objective input on that and just really also weigh your kids' opinions. Say, you know, how would you feel if I started dating? And they may say, well, you know, that's uncomfortable. We're going to have a new stepdad. And you need to be able to say, no, I'm not interested in that for many, many months. Really, if you get into a serious relationship, serious like gonna get married or be marital style exclusive, within a year, you're probably going to be with that statistic about 70-some%
mm-hmm.
of second marriage failures because people go on the rebound and they don't realize the whole second marriage was a rebound.
And Wes, if the child is still resisting the changes, you know, even after an appropriate amount of time has passed,
yeah.
what then?
Well, I do a lot of those cases. And if the parent has acted as at the best standards you can act
mm-hmm.
and the kids cannot handle it, which does happen, I think that is when the therapist really wants to come into play because there's some grieving that's not happening there.
Right.
And there's some reorganization of that may be helpful.
Okay. John from Kansas City, Missouri has a question about timing here. Maybe our last point about moving on too quickly. Go ahead, John.
Hi, good morning. I'm the father of a daughter who is getting divorced, married for 10 years. They have two little children. They've already separated, but her husband is trying to push the envelope with her about when he has the two girls, because they have visitation arrangements already. But when he has the two girls, he wants to be able to introduce them to his new girlfriend. And it's been a very quick association with this woman. And my daughter is very concerned about it. She thinks he ought to wait 4 to 5 months before her daughters are introduced to this woman. So I'm just looking for a little advice, as is she, because, you know, we talk on the phone all of it because she's going through a tough time.
I do not know the specifics, but in general, I agree with you. I think that these things get introduced too quickly, and it is in the nature of rebound relationships. The purpose they serve is to rebound. They are not good candidates for long-term relationships, and kids don't do well when you introduce them to a lot of new partners or introduce them too quickly. So dating is just fine, but I believe you are correct to be concerned about that.
John, thank you, and good luck. We had a tweet here from Deanna who called, our family wizard is a smartphone app that allows communication without animosity and a focus on children. Are you guys familiar with it?
Yes.
Ron, are you?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with that one, but the idea, of course, is to reduce the emotional reactivity in conversations.
We use it quite a bit, and the Johnson County family law judges are ordering that our family wizard be used as a communication tool for parents, especially in high conflict cases, because there's also a language filter in our family wizard.
So it just cleans out. It just takes out you dirty blankety blank and puts you beautiful ex-spouse.
It
plugs that
in. It doesn't plug it in, but it does suggest different changes.
That is great.
So that you can make those changes yourself so that over time, the parents who are using our family wizard hopefully learn how to better communicate with each other instead of using you statements saying, I feel this or I'm concerned about this.
Every day is a day to learn.
There you go.
That is great.
Well, Ron Nelson, you're up next with the fourth, number four on the list of things not to do if you're going through a divorce. Number four, try to show the kids and the court, your parents, the school, your church, everybody else, how bad the other parent is and how good you are as a parent. The advice here is to not do that, of course.
That's correct. And this goes along with a bunch of the other suggestions that we have because kids aren't dumb. Kids understand and have lived with both parents as parents, and they know what they like, what they don't like. They know what each of the parents is like in their day-to-day arrangements, and they generally don't believe a parent when that parent's trying to make themselves out as being all good and the other parent is all bad. And if parents talk to their friends and family and school about how bad the other parent is, then that's going to get back to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be a positive relationship.
And I guarantee you, Steve, it makes people suspicious. I go out to the schools, I meet with people, I interview them as collateral witnesses, and somebody comes in the door and says, well, you know, Ron isn't a very involved parent, and he just doesn't care much about his children. And they're just sitting there thinking, oh, my gosh, it's another one of those.
Right.
So the more you do that, you're showing an insecurity in your own parenting and in your own position in the relationship. And society picks up on that. You just don't fool many people.
Let's go to Rico from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Couldn't agree with you more. How you doing?
Good.
I was listening to your show there, and I wanted to let you know that, yes, that's so true. Kids are very smart, and one thing, I'm going through a process right now, and the most important thing is definitely not keep the kid involved with anything that has to do with what you and your person that you're divorcing or separating is going through. The kid is only big thing right now is to go to school, have fun with life, and just make sure that both parents can understand that that kid just needs to be happy and be a kid.
So true.
And once you start hearing the negative talk about each other, I mean, it does. Kids are very smart, and they pick up on that, and you start choosing sides, and society sees that as well, like you said. And I just wanted to just really agree with you on that. And I think it's very important to exercise not talking about anything like that in front of the kids, and just be a good parent and spend time with them and, you know, do all the good things that you should as a parent.
Right, I appreciate that.
You can be really subtle and make mistakes like this. You can, you know, so the kid comes in and says, well, oh, I couldn't find my jacket at mom's house. I don't know where it is. And you could say, well, you know, you ought to keep better track of it. Or you can say, well, you know, your mother, she can't keep anything straight.
Yeah.
And that isn't, you know, you didn't. call her a dirty name, mm-hmm. but you implied she's incompetent. And those little micro attacks pop up a lot when you're not listening closely to yourself.
Okay, we're down to our final three here of things not to do if you're going through a divorce. Wes Crenshaw, number three, do not surrender, this is interesting, do not surrender hierarchy between parent and child to manage the neediness and loneliness that parent is feeling.
It's there's always a sense of rejection. Even if you're the person who files the divorce and wants to be out of the marriage, people have a lot of really ambivalent feelings about that. I work with a lot of people who are struggling even though they're the initiator. They didn't want the marriage to end, but they know it is not a healthy marriage. Wherever you're at, you're going to feel this sense of loneliness and grief and rejection. One option to solve that problem is to cozy up to your kids and really let them be the main source of support in your life, because isn't that why you had kids in the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
No. Mm-hmm. Kids, as the gentleman who just called said, kids need to just be kids. They need to not be your support system. I've more than once had a parent and child in my office arguing about how to put up the new cabinets in the kitchen or something. And I will look at them and I will say, you two fight like a couple. Hmm. And not one of those parent and child have ever looked back at me and said, what are you talking about? They know, because they've lost hierarchy and they're functioning almost like a pseudo couple now. Watch out for it.
And what if you're the kind of parent who's sort of a buddy to his kids,
yeah.
and you're already in that mold to begin with?
You're at a much higher risk.
Much higher risk of?
Of making that an even more problematic situation. The hierarchy always has to exist because the goal of parenting is to get fired. You're supposed to get fired by your best customers, so they move on and become adults. And this, we see folk, kids feeling so sorry for a parent that they can't do that.
Okay, Ron, number two here. Again, the list of things not to do if you're getting divorced. Do not go for the jugular by hiring a pit bull attorney to go after the other parent. This is right down your pike as a family law attorney yourself.
Frequently, we get calls from clients or potential clients who do want a pit bull attorney.
Who's the meanest attorney you can refer me to?
Right. Or are you... are you as mean as you need to be to get me what I want?
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, what parents want is a good relationship for the rest of their lives with their child and their ex-spouse.
Is that what you say to people like that?
That is what I say.
They just don't know it yet. That is what they want. They just don't always know it.
Yeah. And it's extremely difficult in that initial period to get along with someone that you've now broken up with, that... you've pushed yourself to the limits and broken that bond, that emotional bond, and now you have to be nice to the person. Well, what I always tell clients also is you can get to a result where you have a parenting plan.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, it's going to be about the same in your particular situation, whether you fight about it or whether you agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
You can either spend lots of money and pay me lots and lots of money, send my kids to college, or you can do it in a more civil and agreeable way where you work together with your former partner to come up with what both of you think is best for the children so that your children will grow up to be good and productive members of society.
Okay, let's go on to the final reason. The number one reason on the list here of things to avoid if you're going through a divorce. Wes, don't forget that when you have kids, the other parent will interact with them and with you for the rest of your life. You've sort of so far, but that's the point that too often gets lost here.
It does. It's like, you remember all the Back to the Future movies, and Doc says to Marty, you're thinking three-dimensionally. You have to think four-dimensionally. And that means that you're going to move through time with these people. There's going to be weddings and Thanksgivings and graduations, and you are all going to have to come together, and there's going to be discussions of how to have college and all these things that you planned that you were going to have to deal with as a married couple, you're going to have to deal with in divorce. They don't get to be 18. You know this, and you're done with them. None of us are done with our kids at 18 or 19 or 22. Most parents remain financially and emotionally involved with their kids through about age 25 or 6.
Yeah.
So think four-dimensionally. Think what's up ahead and plan for that instead of assuaging your anger in the moment.
Well, what a great list. I want to thank our good guest today as we ran through this top 10 list of things to avoid if you're going through a divorce. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a Lawrence psychologist and author. Ron Nelson is a Johnson County family law attorney. Good advice, gentlemen. Appreciate it very much, you coming in today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care, Steve.